Directly behind me, the Temple Mount. But what is the Temple Mount? And why is it so important to the people of Israel? The answer's next in this episode of The Prophetic Connection. This place, the Mount of Olives, very near. Fulfilling the prophecy, waiting for the day when the Messiah will come. I need only one verse to answer the question of why the Temple Mount is important to the people of Israel. It's found in the book of Kings, 1 Kings chapter 9, verse 3. And the context for the verse is the consecration of the first temple of Solomon that stood on the Temple Mount behind me. But listen to what God says when he spoke to Solomon, and this verse records it. Verse 3, 1 Kings 9. And the Lord said to him, to Solomon, I have heard your prayer and your supplication that you have made before me. I have consecrated this house, meaning the first temple, which you have built, to put my name there forever, and my eyes and my heart will be there perpetually. So God says that he watches over this sacred, holy temple mount. That's why it's also important to the Jewish people.
The Temple Mount in Jerusalem is the holiest site on earth to the Jewish people. It's also the most contested piece of real estate in the entire world. But why has this 20-acre parcel of land been so important to all Jews everywhere and in all generations?
Well, the importance of the Temple Mount in Jerusalem stems from the fact that God chose that as really, in a sense, his headquarters from the sacrifice of Isaac on Mount Moriah. Which was in fact did become the site for the temple in Jerusalem, which is just an incredible conjunction if you think about it. And then also Yeshua, Jesus being crucified in Jerusalem, that this is the site and this is the place that God chose. And through King David instructed Solomon to create that temple for, yes, the sacrificial system. But really the purpose of the sacrificial system was to provide atonement and reconciliation with God, not only for Israel, but also for the nations. And if you look back at Solomon's dedication of the temple in 1 Kings 8, what you see is that Solomon prays and he asks God to hear the prayers of the nations. When anyone turns toward that temple, toward Jerusalem, And I think figuratively we could say for the nations that respect God's choosing of Israel, back to that subject, that God would forgive them, that God would hear their prayers, that God would bring healing and blessing. And this locale, this Temple Mount, it's not just a political issue. It's a deep covenantal spiritual issue of God's creating.
Does this mean that physical places are important to God?
God established physical places to give us a sense of his manifest presence, that he's not a distant God, but he's among us. And that was the tabernacle in the wilderness, that portable temple, as it were. And then the temple built by Solomon became that permanent location. We also know that God said several times in the Old Testament that in Jerusalem, he has placed his name forever. So God's whole identity, his character, his reputation is tied up with his presence in Jerusalem, and in particular, in a temple. Certainly, a temple does not limit his presence, but it is a focal point where people come and worship together as a community. The temple is an assembly. It is a gathering point. And so the temple is important.
Why does such an ancient site have so much relevance and importance to Jews today in the 21st century, especially when there is no longer a Jewish temple on the Temple Mount.
People ask me, why did God pick that spot for the Binding of Isaac story? I always give the same answer. You gotta ask God. But for whatever reason, that place is the nexus. It's the meeting place between the metaphysical and the physical, which means it's the logical place to connect to God, the easiest way possible. To give a modern example, like when you're looking for free Wi-Fi, traveling around somewhere in the world, you're looking at the bars on your phone to see where the best reception is. This is the highest spiritual download site.
Does Israel have any room for negotiation where the Temple Mount is concerned?
Israel does not want to, does not need to negotiate the Temple Mount for a couple of reasons. One, it's God's divine and sovereign choice of the center of his activity in the earth and in Jerusalem. And for another, because our sovereignty as a nation requires us to maintain our integrity as the capital of the nation. This is the spiritual center. This is the historic center. This is the prophetic center of Israel.
One of the reasons the Temple Mount, where the temple was located, why it's a non-negotiable, is the fact that that is the most holy, central, geographical place of worship for the Jewish people. There are some who would even deny that there was ever a Jewish presence on that Temple Mount. But we know from the scriptures, both Old and New Testament, we know that Jesus taught in the temple. We know that Jesus walked in the temple precincts. The temple is a non-negotiable.
Could a day be foreseen when a new or third temple will be erected on the site?
Will a new temple be erected there? Well, ultimately, I'm not enough of a careful scholar of all the details of what has to happen and when, but reading the latter chapters of Ezekiel, it certainly looks to me like there will be a temple again. Does there have to be a temple before the Messiah returns? That also kind of seems from the book of Daniel that there's something happening there. I know that there's a longing in the heart of our people for a restoration. It's really only the extremists in Israel that are vying for that immediate rebuilding of the temple. That needs to be kept in mind.
How important is the existence of a standing temple in Jerusalem, where the Jewish people's faith in God is concerned?
Yes, it's absolutely fundamental to the Jewish worldview. This messianic era, which is a concept the Jews brought to the world, that Christianity later adopts, part of the Messiah's job description is to bring the Jewish people physically back to the land of Israel, spiritually back to keeping the Torah, the ingathering of the exiles, and the return to that relationship with God. So many Jews are disconnected, but we do see that happening even today, both those things. But then it's also rebuilding a temple on that spot and reinstituting the temple service, the high priests, the temple sacrifice, all that, according to the majority of Jewish opinion, comes back into play again, and we reestablish a Jewish commonwealth and the Jewish government with a king, a Jewish supreme court of the rabbis called the Sanhedrin, the high priesthood, all the Kohanim going back into action. So yes, absolutely. It's considered to be sort of the pinnacle of this whole process of redemption is the rebuilding of the temple, and it's something that Jews pray for three times a day, every day of the year.
Does the Bible contain prophecies that point forward to a new or third temple?
There are different ways of interpreting the scriptures. Some prefer to look at things literally unless it's obvious that something was written for symbolic purposes. There are others that see almost everything symbolic. They spiritualize the scriptures. But if you take it more literally, I believe that a temple will be rebuilt. I don't think it's something that we should take the initiative to do, but it is prophesied in a number of places. Sadly, the Antichrist himself will occupy that temple. He'll be demanding worship as God, ultimately, in that final battle, we'll know who the real God is, and the Antichrist will be destroyed. But it does speak of those last days where the Antichrist will come and try to throne himself and reveal himself as God at that very temple.
Don't go away. After this short break, Dr. John Twee returns with his teaching. October 7th will forever be seared into the minds and hearts of Israel. Not since the Holocaust have such brutal atrocities been inflicted on God's chosen people. Because of this massacre and the ensuing war, the most vulnerable citizens of this tiny peace-seeking nation are in desperate need. C4I has been there from the start, supplying much-needed resources for the charities on the ground who look after children, Holocaust survivors, the poor, and so many more. This has been a great challenge, and your support is crucial as we continue to stand with the Jewish nation. When you give a one-time donation of $25 or more, you'll be making a real difference in the lives of the people of Israel. And as a special thank you, you will receive the bi-monthly newspaper Israel and Christians Today. Call the number on your screen now, 1-888-206-1986. Or go to c4i.ca with your generous gift and show the people of Israel that you care.
In the distance, the Jewish Temple Mount in Jerusalem. One of the most controversial, if not the most controversial, piece of real estate on planet Earth. It is that because it's there that the Jewish temples once stood. First of all, the Temple of King Solomon, and then the second temple, the refurbished temple of King Herod. Both of them built there on the threshing floor that David purchased. And David said that he was offered the land free of charge, but he said, no, I must pay a price for it so that we can erect a house for our God. So David paid the price and bought the land legitimately from its original owner. But all down through the centuries, it has been a place of controversy. It represents the heart of the Jewish nation because it represents the heart of God. Listen to these words on the lips of the psalmist in Psalm 132, in verses 13 and 14, which answers the question, why Jerusalem? For the Lord has chosen Zion, and Zion is a synonym for Jerusalem, and for Israel for that matter. He has desired it for his dwelling place. This is my resting place forever. Here I will dwell, for I have desired it. Now those words were written about 3,000 years ago in the time of the psalmists of Israel. But sometime after that, the first temple was built there because the Jewish people realized that this was the place God had chosen. And this is why every synagogue, wherever it is in the world, faces Jerusalem. It's why Jews, whether in Jerusalem or in places of exile, would direct their prayers toward this holy place, the Temple Mount. Daniel was taken as a young man captive from Jerusalem by the Babylonian armies in the year 586 BC, more than 2,500 years ago. He, with the cream of Israeli young people, taken by the Babylonians to be assimilated into the empire that was Babylon at that time. And Daniel remained faithful. It's an amazing thing. He was taken as a very young man, probably a teenager, probably from a priestly family. But even in Babylon, 1,000 miles or more across the deserts, beyond Jerusalem on the horizon, he remained faithful to God for the rest of his life. And the truth is, he never returned to Jerusalem. He served successive empires, but always his God and his prayers toward Jerusalem were the priorities of his life. But it pleased the rulers that ruled over him, and he always found favor because God's anointing was upon him. And yet there was jealousy in the Babylonian court because of Daniel's favor with the king. And so they set different snares for him. And in Daniel chapter 6, they set a snare that if anyone worships any other god other than the king of Babylon, he should be placed in the lion's den. Well, as the story unfolds in Daniel chapter 6, we read in verse 10, "Now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed," meaning the edict of the king, which couldn't be changed after it was signed, "he went home, and in his upper room, with his windows open toward Jerusalem, he knelt down on his knees three times that day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, as was his custom since early days." So even in the moment of peril, when his life was at stake, Daniel's first response was to direct his prayers, open his windows toward Jerusalem, far to the west, and get down on his knees and pray to his God. And of course, they caught him praying to the God of Israel. And because of it, could accuse him then, and he was placed in the lion's den. And of course, the thought was he will not survive the night. But it's a wonderful story because Daniel did survive that night. And the king, who was sad and sorry that he had signed that edict, he was actually tricked into doing it, got no rest that night, was up early the next morning and rushed to the lion's den to see if Daniel was still alive. And then Daniel called out to him, "Do not trouble yourself, O king, I'm fine, because the angel of the Lord stood by me this night." This is the story of the people of Israel. In times of peril, God's anointing upon them, God's favor with them. And Jews in exile, like Daniel, always said, next year in Jerusalem, they longed to come back. But Jews today who have come back now say, perhaps, next year a new temple can be built in Jerusalem, and they long for the establishment of a new temple. We read this prophecy, actually, of the new temple that's to come in the book of Ezekiel, in Ezekiel 37 and verses 26 to 28. "Moreover, I will make a covenant of peace with them, and it shall be an everlasting covenant with them. I will establish them and multiply them, and I will set my sanctuary in their midst forevermore." So within this verse, the promise of a new temple to be built on the Temple Mount. The word forevermore suggests that it can't be the first or second temple because they were destroyed, but this temple will be there forevermore, permanently, in other words. "My tabernacle also shall be with them. Indeed, I will be their God, and they shall be my people." And the distinction between the tabernacle and the sanctuary or the temple would be that the tabernacle is more of a temporary dwelling, while the temple is a permanent place for the Almighty God. And then God says, "By this, the nations also will know that I, the Lord, sanctify Israel when my sanctuary is in their midst forevermore." So when this third temple is finally built, it will be a declaration to the nations that God has been faithful to Israel. And the temple is symbolic of that, and the fact that once again, God dwells at the heart of his people. Now, it's interesting, these verses are prophetic in nature. And as we look at the Temple Mount today, there are two mosques of Islam there, the Golden Dome of the Rock, the Mosque of Omar, and then to the south of it, and closer to where I'm standing, the Grey Dome of the Al-Aqsa Mosque, actually a working mosque where Muslims gather on Fridays to worship their God. And it's interesting that they're there today, and yet this promise of a Jewish temple is found in the prophecies of the Bible as well. Now, how on earth is that going to come about? The answer is that God knows. But more importantly, God has promised that one day a third temple will be on that holy site. And a temple cannot be erected anywhere else but on that holy, sacred site we call the Temple Mount. And there's the irony in the story. Today it's called the Temple Mount, and yet there are no temples standing on that Temple Mount. But we have God's promise of a day to come when that will be the case. And perhaps in realizing that different religions vie for that holy site, it suggests to us a future scenario where there'll be again a clash of kingdoms, a clash of religions. And this has happened throughout history as people have fought over the land of Israel and over the Temple Mount itself. Now, in the midst of all of that, we have other prophecies that tell us that the Lord will come as the defender of Israel. In Zechariah chapter 14, we read these words, "Behold, the day of the Lord is coming, and your spoil will be divided in your midst. For I will gather all the nations to battle against Jerusalem." Now, this has happened many times before, but as we read on in the context of Zechariah 14, we realize that there are events taking place in this scenario that have not taken place before in the history of Israel. "The city shall be taken, the houses rifled, and the women ravished. Half of the city shall go into captivity, but the remnant of the people shall not be cut off from the city." Why? God intervenes. And the next verses explain what God does. "Then the Lord will go forth and fight against those nations as he fights in the day of battle. And in that day, his feet will stand on the Mount of Olives, which faces Jerusalem on the east." Now, I'm standing in West Jerusalem, and over my shoulders, you have a panorama of the Temple Mount, Mount Scopus, and also the Mount of Olives. I don't know if the camera can see them in this moment, but we will give you a panoramic shot of all of this, because that's exactly what Zechariah is describing. When the Lord comes, he comes to the Mount of Olives that you can see in the distance, and it's represented by the very tall tower, which is in fact the summit of the Mount of Olives. And we're told that when in that day his feet will stand in the Mount of Olives, which faces Jerusalem on the east, and the Mount of Olives shall be split in two from east to west, making a very large valley. Half of the mountain shall move toward the north and half of it toward the south. Meaning the ridge that you can see in the distance will be split in two. My own interpretation is that there will be a valley created on an east-west axis right through the mountain that you can see behind me. And probably that will create a gap that leads right up to the golden eastern gate, which today is sealed, but perhaps in that moment would be miraculously opened, triggered by the Messiah's feet touching the Mount of Olives. So, to put it in perspective, there are battles ahead, more struggles over Jerusalem, but there is also hope. More about that after this short break.
The people of Israel yet again are at the center of the world's attention after suffering an unjust, unprovoked, and unprecedented attack within her borders. Yet Israel continues to thrive. However, there have been many of the less fortunate that have fallen through the cracks. C4I, with all of these challenges, has been able to continue their support of those in need because of people like you. Through their partners on the ground, meals and supplies have continued and are making a real difference in Israel. Your monthly giving is what keeps things going even in these most difficult times. Become a new monthly partner today with your gift of just $25 a month or more, and you will receive the DVD, Seven Amazing Prophecies Fulfilled, as well as the bi-monthly newspaper, Israel and Christians Today. Call now, 1-888-206-1986, or visit us online and make a difference in Israel today.
Throughout the Bible, God is depicted as the defender of Israel. And the scenario in Zechariah chapter 14 is that God intervenes when Jerusalem, and Israel for that matter, when they are at the point of annihilation once again. And it is this time, it is the Messiah who comes, and his feet touch the Mount of Olives. And as Zechariah describes what happens next, he does it prophetically. And there is what sounds like a description of a thermonuclear war, but it could also be just as easily the fire and brimstone that falls from heaven, as has happened in times past. But beyond all of that carnage, remember, this is God's intervention against the nations that come against his holy people, Israel. But beyond that, there is hope. And we read these words in Zechariah 14, beginning in verse 16. "And it shall come to pass that everyone who is left of all the nations which came against Jerusalem shall go up from year to year to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, and to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. Ironically, we're filming these episodes during the Feast of Tabernacles, the last feast in the rhythm of feast in the Jewish calendar. It's the final ingathering harvest. It's giving thanks to God for what He has provided in the harvest that have been that have passed, but also in a sense paying homage to Him for the harvest to come. And in our Christian context, we could liken it to the final great ingathering harvest of the believers before the Messiah comes. But it's interesting that Zechariah says this is the one feast of all the feasts that will be celebrated by the nations year after year, Jews and Gentiles together. And it's so important to God that any nation that refuses to come will fall under condemnation and judgment. And it shall be that whichever of the families of the earth do not come up to Jerusalem to worship the King, for us this is Jesus of Nazareth, King of kings, the Lord of hosts, on them there will be no rain. If the family of Egypt will not come up and enter in, they shall have no rain. So there's choice in this, the freedom to choose to worship the King or the freedom to choose not to worship the King. But judgment will fall on those who will not worship the King of kings. They shall receive the plague with which the Lord strikes the nations who do not come up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. And this shall be the punishment of Egypt and the punishment of all the nations that do not come up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. And then this, as the book of Zechariah ends, in that day, holiness to the Lord shall be engraved on the bells of the horses. The pots in the Lord's house shall be like the bowls before the altar. Yes, every pot in Jerusalem and Judah shall be holiness to the Lord of hosts. Everyone who sacrifices shall come and take them and cook them. In that day, there shall no longer be a Canaanite in the house of the Lord of hosts. So the prophecy says that only the righteous will dwell before the Lord our God. And it'll be those who are summoned to come and worship Him. And the Feast of Tabernacles will be celebrated year after year as the nations, as the people, pay homage to the King.
Thank you for watching The Prophetic Connection, and join us next time for The Looming Battle for Jerusalem. October 7th will forever be seared into the minds and hearts of Israel. Not since the Holocaust have such brutal atrocities been inflicted on God's chosen people. Because of this massacre and the ensuing war, the most vulnerable citizens of this tiny peace-seeking nation are in desperate need. C4I has been there from the start, supplying much-needed resources for the charities on the ground who look after children, Holocaust survivors, the poor, and so many more. This has been a great challenge, and your support is crucial as we continue to stand with the Jewish nation. When you give a one-time donation of $25 or more, you will be making a real difference in the lives of the people of Israel. And as a special thank you, you will receive the bi-monthly newspaper Israel and Christians Today. Call the number on your screen now, 1-888-206-1986. Or go to c4i.ca with your generous gift and show the people of Israel that you care.